This is the second part of an interview with my friend and improv teacher, Melanie Chartoff. In it, we talk about how important it is to find your own point of view on a character in order to give life to a role. Melanie also shares her three-part technique for developing that point of view. We then discuss how voice acting is not about hiding behind a silly voice, but about revealing who you truly are so you can make the emotional journey of your character believable.
And now, the feature segment.
The idea of finding your point of view, finding your authentic opinion, is that central to success as a voice actor in terms of finding your voice?
Well, there are a lot of people who work in anime, I'm sure you've worked with them, who have mostly a whole array of archetypal characters that they do. Stereotypes, cliches, they really work in some medium. I'm talking about series regulars. I'm having the series regular conversation with you. The series regular tends to have a stronger point of view than any of the other characters. You know, Homer Simpson, Cartman, these are characters with very strange, strong points of view.
And we have to live with them for long periods of time through the story. They're carrying us through the story.
Yeah, you better care about them. You better feel about yourself in a way that creates empathy. You have to have a charismatic voice. You know, if you're going to be a walk-on, it doesn't make much difference. They can get the cliche child or the cliche villain. But to carry a show, which I've been fortunate enough to do a couple of times, you've really got to be in touch with your feelings.
Right. But it's interesting because your Dee Dee Pickles is not your natural voice.
No.
And yet it's informed by your opinion as Melanie.
It was kind of a fabrication and a kind of an aggregate of women I knew, kind of neurotic mothers that I knew. Coupled with my own mom's voice, which runs a lot faster than mine. It's like my voice, only it's a little bit faster and speeded up, and it's kind of a little higher. And my mother, God bless her, she's going to be listening to this.
I hope. Okay, I won't send her a link.
Oh, don't. But my mother has a kind of anxious repression that she's trying to protect people from, and it kind of informed my impersonation of Dee Dee, who was kind of a very scared mother, a very protective mother, and very sweet, forced sweet. And it seemed to, you know, make the producers listen doubly hard if they hadn't heard a take like that on it before.
So that's a fascinating synthesis, isn't it? Because you're bringing an emotional honesty, but then with that, you're bringing a sort of stylization in the character voice, and the two of them have to sort of come together so that it sounds stylized and it sounds wonderfully appropriate for this cartoon character, but it still has an honesty underneath it emotionally.
I hope so. I felt so. I think so.
Is that how you think about it when you're doing it?
It's just gut.
Okay.
And it's for other people to appraise and discuss later. You know, casting directors and critics will kind of appraise the overview like you and I are doing now because we're not in it. But when you're in it, you know how it is. You just go from your gut.
Just go from your gut.
And I would say that my improvisational background taught me to just feel my instinct in response to the material.
I find that when I'm working with my students in class, often what they want to do is jump right back into these very big character-y voices, but there's no emotional honesty underneath it. They're actually hiding behind the voice. And so much of what I have to do is try to get them to first perform with their natural voice and to teach them to value their natural voice, because no one's going to be able to compete with their natural voice because it's theirs. And only then, when they're centered, can we start expanding and saying, well, now we can start putting more sauce on it. But until you've cooked the meat properly, we can't start putting spices on it.
I wholeheartedly agree. Also, I think there are three points of view that a person shows in their own voice. And this is one of the exercises we do in my class. There's your point of view on yourself that you imbue with your voice. There's your point of view about the world around you. Are you comfortable in it? Are you at ease in it? Or is it threatening? For example, Dee Dee Pickles found it very threatening. And there's your point of view on the material that you happen to be doing at that moment. And those three point of views in tandem make for your aboriginal creation for which you'll get hired.
So your point of view on yourself, your point of view on the world in general, and then your point of view of the situation you're in right now.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah, and sometimes in my classes, I'll have everybody get up and introduce themselves, why they're taking the class, and you can tell all those points of view really quickly. Are they able to connect with the audience? Are they speeding through it? Do they love being up there? Are they getting off on their bad selves? Are they exhibitionistic? Mm-hmm. You get so much from it. And then you can point out to them how you come across, you know, and you might want to pump this up or taper that down. Because ultimately what I encourage with charismatizing improvising in my classes is to connect with the broadest demographic of people that you possibly can, to get empathy with people of all ages, to find a vibration of yourself that isn't judgmental of others to the extent that you rule out half of your paying public. Of course, there are niche programs, you know. I mean, there are shows about jerky guys, you know, that turn off most women, but unfortunately turn on most 18 to 49-year-old men. So there's a big marketplace for that. They don't care if the women like that particular point of view. And it works for them. I myself want to be as accessible as possible. So
it's about flexibility in terms of the different stories you can work on. Is that what?
Sure. However, I have read for villains, and I played a villain on a show some years ago. I played the principal of a high school, a maniacal villainous character who was running a high school like she was Eva Perón running a small South American country, and I loved manipulating in a Machiavellian way. Yeah. Loved, you know, being as hateful as possible, and got a lot of love for it. It was bizarre. Got a lot of love for it.
I think those characters allow people to have power fantasies and work out their frustrations in ways, because I play a character like that in a show right now. His name is Shizuo, and it's in modern-day Tokyo, and he has some sort of adrenal gland problem. He's so strong, he can rip vending machines out of the ground and throw them at people. And he has real anger management issues. He walks around most of the time acting cool as a cucumber, but you know, you never know when a red flag is going to go up and suddenly he's tearing things out of the ground and throwing them at people.
Fun.
And everyone loves this character, because I think that's what they would like to be able to do sometimes when they're pissed.
Yeah.
Is to be able to rip things out of the ground and throw them at people. So let's go back to this idea of a point of view. I have found that many times people who are attracted to voice acting, sometimes they are of the more shy bent. They think that somehow voice acting is less scary than getting up on stage or getting in front of a camera, and somehow they can hide behind their voice or whatnot. But it's clear that that's not the case.
Voiceover is an extreme close-up. You can obfuscate on camera. You can cover up your behavior. You can hide on camera with your personality, with your body. A woman can toss her hair and really throw you off the track as to what she's feeling. But voiceover is very intimate, very revealing. There is really nowhere to hide. If you're ashamed of your body, maybe you only want to do voiceover if you're handicapped, it's probably a great career possibility for you. Mm-hmm. But they're still going to know who you are. And if they don't, there's going to be something missing from your career.
Yeah. So this point of view, finding your point of view and being honest about it, that takes a certain amount of courage, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The courage to be yourself.
Isn't that funny? Most people talk about Mel Blanc and voice acting and the man of a thousand voices. And yet, over and over again, I say it to my students, and whenever I talk to people who are successful voice actors, you gotta start with yourself. You've gotta be willing to stand up and be yourself first before you can be other characters.
Well, I don't know Mel Blanc, and I didn't know his son. Very successful, both of them. But I had a feeling there was a sarcastic guy in there, a sarcastic Jewish guy.
Yeah.
There was always an edge in a lot of the things he did.
Yeah.
Bugs Bunny, was that his?
Yeah.
He was a smartass.
Yes, he was.
He was kind of like one of the R Gang, you know, comedy kids. Kind of like a street kid.
Yeah.
So I think he had New York roots. I think he came from, you know, the hood in Brooklyn, something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't, again, don't know this for certain. I haven't studied up, but mm-hmm. I got a strong point of view from him.
I love how Melanie compares voice acting to an extreme close-up on camera. Ironically, even when you're alone in a recording booth, there is really nowhere to hide when you stand in front of a microphone. You must be courageous enough to be yourself. As I always like to say, the microphone doesn't capture what you're saying. It captures what you're thinking and what you're feeling. In the next and final section of our interview, Melanie and I discuss the essential differences between improv acting and scripted acting and how they influence each other. She also shares with me one of her secrets for increasing confidence when she feels nervous. I'm sure you'll find it useful. Until then, Best of luck in your voice acting endeavors, and I'll see you in the next episode.